Hola, namaste.
Bonjour, bonjour.
Bonjour, bonjour. Hey, what are you guys doing?
Sitting in a chair, talking into a microphone.
That's definitely the
hanging out with you.
That's the best way to start off a podcast, right? What's going on over here? Nick and I are both cracking open a couple cans of Steel Reserve. They sell six packs at 7-Eleven now.
Nice. Do they?
Nice. I guess we should introduce ourselves. My name is Kevin.
I think that was a necessary introduction. All right. I'm Jared, not drinking a Steel Reserve.
That's Nick. And yeah, this is the 25th Big Planet Comics podcast.
Yeah. Woo, woo, woo.
I don't know what that was. Yay. Hey. I found the correct sound effect. So what have you guys been up to? I know, Jared, you've been playing a lot of Skyrim.
Yep. I'm lost in the depths of that game in the worst possible way.
What level are you?
17th.
17. Level 17. What about you, Nick? What have you been up to?
Not playing Skyrim.
No, oh. Nick is not playing Skyrim.
I'm playing Dance Dance Revolution.
Are you?
No.
You're taking it back? You hooked it up to your CRT so you don't get lag?
I don't know what that means.
Nick and I just recorded this this YouTube video.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you tell people about that a little bit?
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Well, we have another site, MagnaBeam, that we do video game stuff on. And we decided to do a playthrough of a game called Monster Party.
It is
a new game that just came out?
No, it's an old Nintendo game from 1983. I don't know, something like that.
No, it's 1989.
89. Oh,
Nintendo
wow.
wasn't even out in 1983. In 1983, the video game industry had crashed horribly.
Had it?
Due to E.T.
Really?
For the Atari and the Pac-Man conversion. Yeah.
Really?
Before they buried them all in the desert.
Yeah, they buried all those E.T. cartridges in the desert.
What?
Yeah, this was this crazy thing.
How like, have I not heard this? This sounds
basically
amazing.
The Atari came out and it was so popular that they just started producing like millions of games.
Right.
And there was no quality control and everybody was like, I don't know what to buy. And they were all buying all this terrible stuff. And then they put out what was supposed to be the big game of the year was a conversion of Pac-Man from the arcade.
Right.
Except it was terrible. It was like awful. The junkiest crap ever. And everybody got it. And they were all like, oh, video games at home are terrible.
Yeah.
And then the E.T. game came out.
Ugh.
They gave this guy 2 weeks to program an E.T. game. And it was the most broken piece of crap ever.
It didn't
sell like anything. And I think they buried like 2 million cartridges in the desert.
In like a ritual to appease the video game gods.
Yeah, and then the video game industry basically died until 1986 when the NES came out. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Why is this not taught in history classes?
It is taught in the history of video games by Kevin Panetta on Big Planet Comics podcast number 25.
Nice.
I'm doing random sound effects.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. So we recorded this playthrough of this game.
It's a great game. It's got you fight like fried shrimp and punk rockers, and
you wait for zombies to finish dancing at one point.
And some of the bosses are dead before you even get there.
It's true. They
really?
Even say so. I'm dead.
Oh. Yeah. You get to one of the bosses and they're like, sorry, I'm dead.
You still have to beat him with a baseball bat to proceed.
Well, clearly.
To even get out of the room. It was fun though. If you look up MagnaBeam Monster Party on YouTube, you'll find us. I'm trying to think what else has been going on. I'm preparing for my fourth annual Christmas Horror Movie Festival.
Yep. A tradition.
A 4-year tradition.
Well, that's a good tradition.
Or is this
these
year
days?
Five? Oh, no, it's year four.
It's year four because we're going to watch Silent Night, Deadly Night 4.
You can tell by the number of Silent Nights.
That's
Wait,
exactly.
Is that the last one?
Nope, there are five. The fifth one is sort of similar to Halloween 3 in that it doesn't have much to do with the others.
But most importantly, we've got 2 years to finance and or produce our own version of Silent Night, Deadly Night 6.
That's what we should do. We should Swede Silent Night, Deadly Night 6.
That would be awesome.
All we'd have to do is edit together clips from the other movies.
And then it would
Did
be
they already do that?
Yeah, Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 is like 70% clips from Silent Night, Deadly Night 1.
We could do this.
So we're also watching a movie called Elves.
Oh, God, it's terrible.
Nick has seen it. It's
somehow.
American International Pictures. How could it be bad?
It's got Grizzly Adams in it.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just getting more excited. It's like a ripoff of Gremlins where Santa's elves are like gremlins that torture kids on Christmas.
It's really bad, though.
That makes sense.
But then we're going to watch Rare Exports, which is supposed to be very
I really want to see that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's about all we got going on.
That's good.
Yeah. Jared's Skyrimming it up. He's got no stories.
I'm thinking. Nope.
See, because me in Skyrim, crazy stuff happens to me. People's faces appear in walls. My horse can like walk vertically up the side of a mountain. It's amazing.
I've got an Uncharted update.
Do you?
Oh.
I'm on the very end of it. About like 10 minutes left or something.
What an update. Have you thought about starting a Twitter account?
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of that, You can listen. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes.
That's not speaking of it at all.
Oh, well, we have a Twitter account.
We do.
That's the third one. I do them in order.
Oh, I see.
All right. We're at Big Planet Comics.
Order of importance.
On Twitter.
Are you still tweeting?
I am.
Jared's the Twitter master.
So tweet me up. I'd love to tweet back at you.
He loves to tweet. Yep. And you can check that out on Facebook.
Yep.
Facebook.com/Big Planet Comics.
Mm-hmm. I was hoping you'd set up BigPlanetComics.com/Facebook.
That's what
right
I always
now.
Do. Yeah.
No, no, but you should just set up a page like that.
I should. It's and easy. It should say this is the wrong page. And you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.
Yep.
And as always, we love to hear from you guys. So send us questions and comments at podcast@BigPlanetComics.com.
I hope we get some questions this week.
Yeah, we got a couple of questions this week. And by a couple, I mean like 9.
Sweet. What?
Yeah.
We'll take more. Like, seriously, that's one of the best parts of the show is hearing from you guys. So
it is what we love. And it's definitely more fun to do that than babble on about sometimes terrible comics. Usually pretty good comics, but
we're trying.
Yeah. You know, we try. And speaking of that, we should just get right into some reviews. Let's do this.
We love comics. They're swell, except when they're written by Scott LaBelle. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
25 episodes in, and that still makes Jared
still
laugh.
Cracks me up.
Yeah. I think on the second episode, I was like, I'm going to change that.
You did say that.
Yeah, and it just never happened.
You should do a remix.
I should do a
dubstep remix.
Dubstep. We love comics. They are swell. There we go. I'm going to get Skrillex on the phone. Does anybody have their home phone number?
I think it's just one guy.
It is one dude.
Well, you guys get him on the line.
I'll get on it.
All right, so we're going to start out with a book that none of us have actually read, but we have read stuff from it. This is Bad Doings and Big Ideas, a Bill Willingham deluxe edition. Basically, this is a collection of a bunch of the stuff that Bill Willingham did for Vertigo besides Fables.
Everything else he's
yeah.
done.
So let me open this up and see what's in here.
There are 2 Sandman miniseries. There are short stories from House of Mystery.
There's Proposition Player, which was like a kind of gambling magic thing. Yeah, some stuff from Sandman. Oh, it's got a story from Flinch, which is one of my favorite comic series of all time.
It was a horror anthology.
It was a horror anthology by Vertigo that had tons of great people in it. It has the best artwork you'll ever see from Jim Lee in the first issue.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Stuff from The Dreaming.
Murph Pumpkinhead, Agent of Dream, which is taking Murph Pumpkinhead from the Sandman stories and treating him like James Bond in his imagination, which was pretty awesome.
And the 2 Thessaly miniseries that he did, and all the little short stories he did for House of Mystery.
With all the awesome artists.
Yeah, so it's, what is it? It's like $50.
It is, but it's huge.
But it is a huge book.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Huge.
Something like 400 pages. Really.
Yeah, and it's cool.
Yeah.
It's worth checking out. If you like Bill Willingham, you're looking for some more stuff.
Yep. Here's all of it.
This is the way to go. I wonder if they'll ever collect his, was it called Elementals?
He's done several. He did Elementals. He did Coventry, which he did 3 issues of that he wrote and drew. That is like a fantasy world. It's like America, but with elves and magic in it and stuff. It was awesome. And he just gave up on it.
Didn't he do like a porn thing called like Iron Rod or something?
Ironwood.
Same thing.
I mean, don't know.
Ironwood.
Yeah. Ironwood. Is it named after famed comics fan Cat Ironwood?
That would be hilarious.
Do you guys know about Cat Ironwood?
Yeah, I didn't know that's how you pronounce it. I thought it was like Iran Wode.
I think it's just Ironwood. But she wrote a book. I can't remember exactly what the book's called, but it's basically like it's like a magic book about the arcana of Doctor Strange. And it's got like all the spells that he's ever used in any of his books. And I think now they use that as like they actually use that as reference material at Marvel.
The anti-Bible of Doctor Strange.
Yeah, so that's
I did not know about that.
That's Bad Doings and Big Ideas by Bill Willingham. It's always good to jump off when we're not even talking about the thing.
That's what we do.
All right, I don't want to talk about this book next, but let's talk about it anyway.
All right, let's do it quick.
This is Dead or Alive by Scott Chitwood and Alfonso Ruiz. Nick, you read this. Why don't you tell people what this book is about?
I read some of it. I read most of it. It's like about cowboys. And as I like to call them engines.
Yep.
So it's like a train story.
It's just not good. There's
yeah, that's definitely true.
There's like some parts where like people explain too much. Like the dialogue isn't like at all natural. These people are like sitting around talking, and the guy's like, "Oh yeah, this is great. Yeah, my dad's a lawman." Like they just like tell their life story in like each sentence.
Here's a perfect example. This is downright pathetic, Sam. Look at us. Nothing but a couple of worthless cowhands. Barely any money to our names. I mean, your pa was already a Texas Ranger when he was our age.
Yeah. And then that's only part of that. There's more to it.
Yeah, that's half a word balloon.
Yeah.
But then there's also like weird people act weird. Like there's a part where this woman's like dad gets killed. And she's just like,
she reacts pretty well.
We have to go to town and get some stuff to bury these bodies, and I'm gonna go shoot some these dudes, the people that killed them. And then some guys like,
she's a tough
lass. That's a tough girl. I'm like, what? This is an inappropriate time for humor. This their farm just got burned down and her dad got killed. It's really weird.
And then it turns into this kind of zombie book, I guess. It's like,
yeah, I just noticed on the cover that in the duel, one of the gunslingers is missing half a leg because he's zombified.
Yeah, did you not read to the end of this either?
No, I did. I just didn't notice it on the cover.
Yeah, yeah. It's whatever. The art's not that great. It's
the art has moments of really good, like,
where it almost looks like Sean Murphy or something like that.
Yeah, very good
cartoony
stuff. And then, like, the panel or two later, it looks like he just doesn't know how to draw people. I don't know if he just hurried through it or what.
Yeah, the characters are really inconsistent.
Yes, that's
and I feel like they're supposed to be, like, in their early 20s, but they look like they're 12. It's really weird.
Oh, I thought they were supposed to be 12.
Yeah, well, he said my dad was a Texas Ranger at this point. And, I mean, I'm sure his dad wasn't a Texas Ranger when he was 12. Well, times were tough back then.
Yeah, they're all Texas Rangers.
Yeah.
Everybody.
All right.
I feel bad talking about these guys' comic like that. They worked on it so hard.
I know. I do feel bad because we always like it. Like last week we talked about Princeless.
Yep.
And those guys were like, oh, cool. We're glad you guys liked our comic and stuff like that. So I wonder if the reverse happens. Like these guys are like, oh, these guys talked about our comic. And then they come on and we're like, this is terrible.
And they're crying.
Yeah, they're just, yeah. Yeah, just try harder next time.
Oh, that's mean.
That is terrible.
Good
that
effort.
It just didn't work out. We can't be nice about everything. That's not our job here.
I want to know how they got this job.
You know, Red 5 has put out some pretty bad books before.
Red 5 is a starting out small publisher. They've done some great stuff and not some great stuff.
I will say Red 5 puts out Atomic Robo, which is a fantastic
amazing
book.
And Abyss was really good too.
Yeah, and Abyss was good, but they put out a couple stinkers too here and there.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's Dead or Alive. I don't think it's really it's a hard one to recommend.
I think the answer is Dead.
Yep, definitely. You choose Dead. All right, moving on to Deadpool Maximus. This is a spin-off one-shot from the Deadpool Max series. It's by David Latham, written by and partially drawn by him. And also Kyle Baker and Sean Crystal draw the second and third stories in here.
Yeah, that's it. No, it's all awesome.
I haven't been reading the regular series. Like, this is obviously building on like the Bob character and Deadpool who've been running around together a lot. How much of this is following from the regular series?
Well, I mean, at the end of the first Deadpool Max series, they get like framed as terrorists. And you know, we talked about like the first issue of Deadpool Max 2 where they're kind of on the run. And this takes place like, it seems like right around where the story is right now. Like issue 2 came out a couple weeks ago. It takes place somewhere around like in there. Like,
yeah, it kind of fits in because Bob is a wanted terrorist in this, Bob from Hydra. And basically Deadpool's trying to make him feel better by putting
Christmas
him through
carol.
A Christmas carol.
Yeah,
but instead of it actually changing things, it just shows Bob that all of his possible lives are just really, really awful.
Yeah. And it's, you don't need to actually read this along with the other series. You can kind of just read it by itself. It might be a little confusing because some of the characters, you might not know the relationships, I guess.
But I thought, like I said, I haven't been keeping up with the regular series. I thought this was really fun.
Yeah, it's really funny. The thing that really stood out about this book for me was that David Latham, we need to figure this out one of these days. He actually drew the first story, and I love his art. And
so
I always miss it. And that story is so funny. It's just about like them dressing up as Santa Claus to infiltrate the CIA.
Both of them.
Yeah, I mean, two Santa Clauses.
Yeah, the basic gist of the story is like Deadpool is acting as like the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future for Bob, and he's taking him through all his possible lives, and each part is drawn by a different artist, so it's pretty cool. It's all one story, and it's funny. I mean, if you like Deadpool Max, I guess you'll like it.
And the last page is hilarious. It's definitely worth checking out just for that. I don't think Jared actually looked. There's like a pin up at the end. It's pretty amazing.
I didn't look at that. Next issue.
So even if you don't buy this, just look at the last page.
That's terrible. Really I thought it was good on its own. Like I said, I've not been reading it. I thought it was, especially the Lapham part at the beginning was amazing.
Yeah, that was great. Kyle Baker's art can be a little weird from time to time.
Yes.
He's definitely not at the height of his powers in this, but it's still good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on to Defenders number one. This is a pretty big book for this week, I feel like.
Yeah, this was definitely one of Marvel's big pushes of a new, you know, they've been doing a lot of like, not restarts, but like number one issues of stuff where they're kind of like trying to rebuild a lot of their mid-level books and characters and stuff. And this was the old school Defenders of like, was this the first Defenders team that got put together? Was these four guys?
Yeah, I mean, it ends up being kind of a variation.
Right. But that was the original idea was Silver Surfer, Hulk, Doctor Strange, who's the fourth?
Namor.
Yeah. So what they're doing with this is written by Matt Fraction, who's been writing a lot of X-Men stuff recently and has gotten actually really good at writing Namor, I feel like. And the art in this is by Terry Dodson, who has also drawn a lot of X-Men stuff recently.
Yeah.
But who I always think of as the artist for the Harley Quinn series, the kind of criminally overlooked Harley Quinn series that DC put out in the late 90s.
Yeah.
Early 2000s, maybe.
Yeah,
yeah, but that was really good stuff. And yeah,
he is amazing.
Yeah, he's definitely fantastic. And I thought this was a cool new take on the Defenders.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's kind of neat that they have a little bit of variation. Like, instead of Hulk, it's the Red She-Hulk is the member now and then. But the characterization in this is really funny. Doctor Strange is funny. Like, he's really serious all the time. But and then the stuff with Silver Surfer is, like, really kind of weird and creepy. He's like, I'm everywhere. I'm the snow. And he's like, oh, I hope you guys, like, he's like kind of yeah, goofy at the same time. And then Iron Fist is pretty amazing. He's got he's testing a zero G jet.
Right. And he's like live casting it over the internet. Yeah. But all he really wants to do is just sit around and read comic books.
Yeah.
It's very true to like the sort of older Iron Fist characterization. He got a little more
serious,
a little more serious with the Brubaker and Matt Fraction stuff that was coming up. But I like that this brings it back to sort of his goofy roots. Yeah. And I like that the Red She-Hulk, who is what's her face?
Betty Ross.
Yeah, she's kind of coming into her own, and she's got a lot of personality.
Yeah,
in
this. She definitely does.
They're like, oh, will you come along and help us? She's like, yeah, can I bring my like big sword?
Yeah.
So it was fun. I mean, the art's great. This really reminded me a lot of the Defenders Indefensible series that came out a few years ago.
Yeah,
which was like a more of a comedy series that was by the guys that did Justice League International back in the 80s.
Giffen
and Kevin Maguire. Yeah, and no, this was like a really fun first issue.
Yeah, and it's got a lot of cool ideas in it, like nonstop. Like every couple pages, something really neat happens, and building up a pretty good story.
The thing I found interesting about it was they had so many little bits and pieces at the bottom of each page. Like every page or two, they just have something like, to see what happens with Hulk as he leaves here, read Incredible Hulk number 2 and stuff like that. You know, which is like the old style Marvel thing, which most comic publishers don't do anymore. But they also had like weird little like fortune cookie sayings. Yeah. And stuff. It felt like a very old school comic.
Well, they
book.
Used to do that in the old Marvel comics.
That's what I mean. Yeah, yeah. It's like the old feeling of just, I don't know.
It's like,
right.
It was a really cool
story
touch.
Continues in two pages or right. On next page.
Right, exactly.
Like
that's what
we or even comparison. Stuff that's completely off topic, like, X-Seeded. Continuing adventures at X-23 and Avengers
right.
Academy, and she's not even in the book.
Yeah,
but I like that because it kind of gives you a sense of what's going on in the rest of the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
It's a very throwbacky kind of thing, but I think they do it well. And
I
like you
works,
were saying,
yeah.
the little fortune cookie things are kind of a play on that I think work out well. And
yeah.
You try to figure out how like what they're talking about works into the story, and then maybe a couple pages later you'll see what they're talking about. I thought it was fun.
Yeah,
I thought like it seemed like a lot of care was put into making this book just a lot of fun to read, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it didn't blow me away like the new Daredevil or Moon Knight or any of those where it was like such a radically different look or take on the character, but it was good.
Yeah, it was just very good.
Yeah.
Solid.
No, it was good stuff. All right, cool. Moving on to Girls, the Complete Collection by the Luna Brothers.
To do the laundry.
What?
Huh? I was thinking Girls, sorry.
Oh. Oh, yeah, yeah. I got really confused.
There you go.
I was so confused. I didn't know if you were singing the song Girls or if you were singing a song by the band Girls.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so
or
that was
singing about girls in general.
Or girls, girls, girls.
Right. Which we shouldn't sing that. We'll probably get sued by Tommy Lee. He'll appear from my ceiling upside down and start hitting us with drumsticks.
Yeah.
That's kind of awesome.
Chicken drumsticks.
Let's do it.
let's do it. He has many methods of mayhem. So this was the second big series by the Luna Brothers, yep. Following Ultra and leading. And then the last one was The Sword. So this is the whole thing collected in one book for $50, which is about the same price as the trades, maybe even
I
a little
think
bit.
It's the same price.
It's a little bit cheaper.
Because there's four
I
trades, and I think they're about 15 or
so. Yeah, so it's 10
each,
bucks cheaper.
So.
I know, Nick, this is one of your favorite series.
It is pretty awesome. I actually bought one of those. Did kind of an absolute edition back in the day.
All right.
Which is kind of that, but like in a smaller, slightly cheaper format. But yeah, it's awesome. It's about these people in this small town, and a giant dome appears over the town, and nobody can leave. And then these girls appear.
Beautiful naked girls.
Beautiful naked girls appear that all look the same.
Yep.
And
shenanigans
occur. It becomes very horror movie-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got a very Invasion of the Body Snatchers
weird
feel
sci-fi
to it.
Feel, yeah.
I remember at the time there was a lot of I can't remember which one came first, but Stephen King wrote a book called Under the Dome, which is like that a very similar story. Yeah.
Ooh, was it the same time?
It's like a town that gets trapped under a dome, and it's kind of like,
I think this was before.
Yeah, I think this was before that.
That was pretty close. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, Luna Brothers, it's kind of hard to describe their art. It's very like it's got kind of a cel animation look. It's everything's kind of flat, but kind of like diorama-ish, like a little kind of 3D thing going on. I don't know. Their stuff's always really well done. And one thing about this book is it's very suspenseful. It's kind of got that survival horror feel to it.
They're great thriller writers. Like every issue when it came out would leave kind of on a cliffhanger. You had to know what happened next. And
a little bit of a weird Stepford Wives kind of feel to it, too.
Yeah, definitely. Mixed with like kind of a Walking Dead-y zombie kind of thing where it ends up being as much about the people in the town
as sort of this event that's
going on.
Yeah.
It's a really great book. I mean, and it's the kind of thing like The Sword where if you read it all together, it's just like, it takes probably about two and a half hours, and it's like watching a really awesome movie.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised none of their stuff's been optioned for movies yet.
That's a good point. Yeah. They would write really
Girls
well.
Might be kind of hard to... there's some crazy stuff in it.
It does have a lot of naked girls and people going crazy from having sex with them and stuff like that. And
there's like giant floating sperm.
Oh, that's definitely true. I forgot about that.
There's some debate over the endings.
So there's that.
Yeah.
But either way, it's like... even if that stuff sounds too weird for you, it's still an amazing book and definitely worth checking out.
Yes.
All right, cool. Well, moving on to Hellblazer Annual Number 1. This is by Peter Milligan, who's been writing Hellblazer for a while. And the art in this is by Simon Bisley, who's been doing covers, but he doesn't usually do the interiors. Jared, I know you just read this like 5 minutes ago.
I did.
So it's probably fresh in your mind. What did you think about it?
Well, this is like following on the theme of Deadpool Maximus. It's another Christmas episode called The Suicide Bridge.
That sounds very Christmassy.
It's not true. This is like a lot of the Hellblazer stuff stands alone on its own anyway. It does kind of build up a big mythos for it over the many, many years. I mean, you know, they've always added to it like that. But this one is just him going back to London and trying to go back to a friend's house that disappeared when they were both teenagers. And his friend's dying mother is like, would you please try and go out and find my son who's been missing for like 40 years? And of course, magical things are involved and a horrific, you know, curses of the city and all that sort of stuff in the typical Hellblazer way.
Yeah,
but the art was amazing.
It's about like a magical bridge that appears and
way to ruin it
causes kids to commit suicide.
Yeah, or to disappear in a suicide fashion.
Or does it?
Yeah, and it's kind of mixed with that story of Hellblazer finding this guy who he was friends with when he was a kid. Kind of is told through flashbacks from when they were younger, in part, and
he's remembering his childhood too.
Yeah, and I thought that was kind of cool. I've read some Hellblazer stuff, not a lot, but I've never actually read anything that's about Constantine when he was a kid, so I thought that was cool. I'm sure there probably has
been
something.
There's a good couple of them where it showed him back when he was like a late teen and he was like really into the punk scene.
So that was like the first storyline that Milligan did. That was actually when Jason Aaron was writing.
Jason Aaron?
I think it was Jason.
He was really big.
Yeah, it was like Jason Aaron and Sean Murphy, I think, did that story. It was like a two-part story called I think it was just called Punk. That was really cool. But and then that's mixed with a story about this sort of young girl who's in a like abusive household. And I thought it was actually really well done.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Bisley's art was a little inconsistent. Sometimes it was really detailed and sometimes it was a little too loose. But I thought overall it was like a cool, it was probably like a 48 page story. It was definitely hefty. Yeah. Hefty. It took me probably about 20 minutes to read it, which for a comic is like amazing.
Yeah, it was really good. But I got a question that maybe somebody out there can answer is how did John Constantine get a scar?
Yeah, I just know that I have not been keeping up, but he's got a scar running down like the top of his brow across his eye onto his cheek.
I don't remember him having that.
If any of you listeners know, we can use Google, but we would like it if you guys would let us know. So send the answer into podcast@bigplanetcomics.com and you'll get a yes prize.
Yeah, I promise. I promise them I don't care enough to actually Google it. So let me know. And I'll listen to it.
And it makes it, if you send it in, it makes it seem like our show is popular and people listen to it.
We know people listen to it. It's just people care enough to interact.
It's true.
It is 48 pages.
But yeah, no, I think we all really enjoyed the Hellblazer annual. Yeah. It's nice to read Hellblazer every once in a while and go, oh yeah, this comic's still pretty good.
Yeah, which is crazy because it's on 250, 260 issues?
Yeah,
or something?
I think even a little bit more than that. Yeah.
Like what that's, other series has gotten up to that?
It's on 280 something.
280?
Yeah.
Crazy.
It's I mean, it was around it was pre-Vertigo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it became a Vertigo book. And
you're pre-Vertigo.
Thank you. That's true. Aww, I am pre-Vertigo. All right. So, yeah, that was a really awesome book. Moving on to another awesome book that is also pretty insane. This is Jack Kirby's Fourth World Omnibus Volume 1 by Jack Kirby.
I like the straightforward simplicity of this book. It's like, you know, straight, like, it's not like, I don't know how to describe it. There's nothing like really crazy going on. It's just a pretty nice, like, easy story about like
simple plot, just, you know, simple two characters,
two crazy planets.
You just took sarcasm to the next level, buddy. So I mean, is it, how do you explain what the fourth world is? Basically,
right, Kirby had an epic vision.
Jack Kirby was a huge creator at Marvel.
On a lot of drugs.
And he, well, no, he wasn't on a lot of drugs.
He's just the most creative man.
He knew that a lot of other people were on a lot of drugs. Oh, yeah. But so basically, Jack Kirby worked at Marvel for years. I mean, starting in like...
he's like, all right, I'm going to take your crappy company and make it hugely successful. Here's a million characters.
And so he worked with them up through the late 60s and even into the very early 70s. And then... basically, he jumped ship to go work for DC, and he had this grand idea that he wanted to do. He wanted to release graphic novels of these. He wanted to release a series of graphic novels that were all tied in together, and that was what the fourth world was going to be.
Yeah.
And DC was like, that's a stupid idea. Nobody wants to buy graphic novels.
But he did it anyway.
And Jack Kirby
no one's
was
invented
like,
graphic yeah, novels no, yet.
Yeah, exactly. So what they did is they let him do I think four different ongoing series. There was Mr. Miracle, New Gods...
so Ryan
Forever or? People
Forever People yeah
and Jimmy Olsen. And then Jimmy he was Olsen. Doing Jimmy Olsen at yeah, the same amazing. Time and there might be another one that I'm forgetting about,
yeah, Jimmy Olsen might have been the more regular one, and he had four of the more
well Jimmy Olsen ones. Is what he started about and the first yeah. started on the first couple issues of this are Jimmy Olsen. So what he did is he created this kind of new fiction for the whole DC universe of these worlds, like New Genesis and Apocalypse, and they were at war, and it was kind of coming down to the DC ground level, where like Jimmy Olsen was really heavily involved in it.
Yeah.
I know it sounds weird because it's Jimmy Olsen, but
yeah, but it's amazing.
So he was releasing all these books at the same time that he was writing and drawing.
Yep.
And they were all tying into each other.
Yeah.
And it was just this amazing thing that like nobody had really seen before.
Yeah, he's basically adding an entire new universe that was already part of a superhero universe. No one's ever done that.
Yeah, because like the Jimmy Olsen story in here has like Darkseid in it, and then he's on Earth or whatever, and then later on in the first issue of New Gods, like Orion's like going around to Apocalypse, and they're like, Darkseid isn't here. He's on Earth.
And yeah, it's like stuff like that. And like there are all these crazy characters. I can't remember the characters Jimmy Olsen meets at the beginning. They're like called the Outsiders, like these crazy people that live in
like Pony Boy.
They live in like trees, and they have like these flying cars, and they fly into space, and then instead of space, it's like photographs of skulls in the background. It's
yeah.
just like,
oh, yeah, he was doing some crazy art stuff on this.
Yeah, he was doing like really weird like collage stuff. Yeah. And it was just Kirby doing Kirby times 10, basically,
yeah,
over
it's
at DC.
Bonkers.
It is bonkers, but it's all, besides the fact that it's insane, it's all really competently done. I mean, it's not hard to read.
No,
right. It's just you're pulled into the insanity. It's not like you read this and you're like, what is this insane garbage? You read it and you're like, how much of a genius is Jack Kirby?
Yeah. Yeah. And the book has the issues in the order they're published, right?
Right.
So it's like we're reading these as they come out every week or month or whatever.
Yeah. So it's not like a chunk of New Gods, a chunk of Mr. Miracle. It's like,
because they've tried to collect it before in the separate books. Like, here's all the New Gods stuff, and it just didn't make sense.
Yeah. I mean, it works a little bit, but you definitely miss big chunks of the story.
They kind of have to be collected this way.
So these came out in kind of expensive hardcovers. They were $50. So this is still $40, I think.
Yeah.
So it's still pretty expensive, but it's hundreds huge. And hundreds of pages.
Yeah.
It's all really well reproduced. A lot of times these old comics suffer because they're reproduced on like really glossy paper and the colors look too bright and stuff. But I think DC was pretty smart on this. They reprinted this on like high quality newsprint. So the colors kind of are absorbed into the page a little bit.
And it's like the way it was done back in the day.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
higher quality.
I couldn't recommend this book any higher than... I don't know what I'm saying, but basically it is highly recommended.
Highest recommends
this book is Jack Kirby's dream come true.
It is. And it will be your dream come true.
It's his graphic novel.
It is.
But he wanted to make that's so true. Many years ago.
It is true.
But then didn't they shut down the project and destroy his dream? I think they cut off almost all the series and he had to wrap them up very quickly.
Yeah. And he came back later and he did a graphic novel called Hunger Dogs.
Yeah.
And then actually Darkseid, I think the last time Kirby did Darkseid was, he did a Kenner Superpowers series, miniseries that was based on the Kenner Superpowers toys from the 80s.
What?
And it's like, it has Darkseid in it and like stuff from Apocalypse and stuff.
That's
awesome.
It's
pretty amazing. But yeah, so DC, you know, recently killed off all these characters. But it seems
all
like.
All of them?
Yeah. They killed the whole fourth. I mean, that's.
Well, they killed off all their characters.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And now, but now it seems like they're maybe coming back. So we'll see what happens. But either way, none of that matters. This is where it's at. This is the book.
Yeah, I don't think Darkseid will ever be as cool as he is in this and in the new DC universe.
I think that's probably definitely true.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on to a thing that's totally less important than that. This is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles micro series number one, Raphael. Not to be confused with the comic of the same name from 1986 or seven or whatever.
This comic's got a great cover.
But this is by Brian Lynch and Franco Uru.
And Splinter.
Well, I don't think Splinter actually wrote this.
Did he draw
it? But he created them.
He did create them.
I thought
this comic is by
technically a scientist dropping some.
Yeah,
ooze.
This comic's by Mutagen.
There you go. Mutagen produced. So Eastman, who, you know, is one of the two guys who started this up, actually did some character designs for a new character. I assume she's never showed up before.
And I've certainly never seen her before.
And if Kevin's never seen her before, she's never been around before because he's the Turtles guru. So there are a few pages in the back of this showing these sketches and stuff, showing again how awesome Eastman is an artist. And then, Kevin is...
I'm looking at a picture of this character, and it is grossing me out.
He almost vomited. It was pretty amazing.
It's sexy time.
It is.
This character is a sexy Arctic fox.
Yeah.
Which you may have seen, if you guys have ever been on DeviantArt, you've probably seen some sexy Arctic foxes. But, I don't know. I'm not the guy to talk about this, so Jared, continue.
Yeah, so that really sticks in Kevin's craw. I didn't mind it so much, because it's basically Raphael running around with Casey Jones, who also drives Kevin up a wall in his new Casey Jones appearances. But it's the two of them patrolling on their own, and they've always been like the two friends who, you know, just riff off of each other very well. And they're on patrols, and they see a a woman being chased by thugs, or as it turns out to be, a mutated Arctic fox.
Yeah.
And shenanigans develop.
I think this is made to fit in, I guess, between issue 5 and 6 of the current ongoing order.
Which haven't come out yet.
Yeah. I was like, wait.
Which is a little weird.
Things like that happen in comics, though. I mean, you can expect stuff like that sometimes.
But the only thing I really liked about this is that it looks like they're going to bring Bebop and Rocksteady into the Ninja Turtles comics. They've never been in those, like, the Eastman and Laird ones, right?
No, they were definitely always part of the animated universe not part of the comics universe. Unless I'm misremembering, but I definitely don't ever remember them from that stuff. Which I think that's fun. There's, like, a little thing with Shredder in it, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I don't know. The furry, you'd have to see this Arctic Fox thing. I mean, she looks like a furry porn character.
The story was actually okay. I mean,
was good.
It was pretty straightforward.
Like, yeah, some of the dialogue was pretty rough for me.
A little bit, yeah.
Casey Jones, like, for like 4 pages, keeps asking Raphael what it feels like to have a family. And it's just like, it's that kind of stuff that it's like, if you're going to change it, make it better. I don't know. But I actually, of everything that's come out so far, I thought this was the best of the new Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, I think I liked it more than the other ones.
But I hated it.
But you hate it. You really hate the Ninja Turtles stuff.
I'm starting to warm to it a little bit, but
you have no choice.
I do like the little stuff like Bebop and Roxy. I didn't even notice that until you actually told me that. I was like, oh, these guys are wearing these glasses. Makes me
well, they kind of make it obvious because
nope,
like the
not
one, well, the one guy's like running and he's like, oh, I wish I was a rhino or something like that.
And then the other one's listening to Rocksteady music.
Yeah, I love the cover to this though. The art and the inside is just kind of okay, but
there are 4 covers to this.
But well, this one's the Brandon Peterson one. It's the guy who does a Mouse Guard, right?
What, really?
Oh yeah, that's true.
And
that's
awesome. It's great. I really like it. He should draw Ninja Turtles comic.
He should.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, the art in this is not so great. So.
No, it's okay. I like the way he draws the Ninja Turtles, but again, the sexy time fox is a little.
Oh, it's and that's the other thing. In the other issues of this, there have been like other very furry-ish characters, and it's kind of grossing me out a little bit.
Fair enough.
Because as much as you guys like to pretend it's not furry, being a furry, it's all about the sex.
Here's the thought. Let's move on to the next book.
Here's a thought. Bubble. This is Thought Bubble Anthology number 1. This contains comics by... When you hear this list, you might melt. Charlie Adlard, Mike Carey, Becky Cloonan, Andy Diggle, Disraeli, Duncan Fegredo, Robin Firth, Stuart Gordon... Stuart Gordon, who directed Reanimator, and Anthony Johnston, who just manages to squeeze his way into stuff every once in a while.
Yeah.
But this is an anthology that's was produced by the Thought Bubble Festival that they have in Leeds, England, every year. And it's kind of just like a little comics convention they have up there.
And it's
actually a fairly big comics convention, but...
The Leeds Comic Art Festival, which the thing I love best about it is that they had an ad on the back saying that the Comics Arts Festival is back from the 14th to the 20th of November 2011.
Well, but I think that's because this book probably came out in the UK before it came out here.
I really hope so.
Yeah, I'm sure it did.
I mean, it's not like this is an advertisement for the 2,500 people that are going to buy this book in the United States for them to fly to Leeds and go to this comic convention.
Yeah, but I'm also not sure it came out in time in England because that's happened before.
Oh, I imagine they had it at the festival, but I'm not sure about that either. But
hope so.
Yeah, so this just has comics by lots of really amazing people in it. They're all about a page, maybe two pages.
Some of them are six pages.
Yeah, I think the Stuart Gordon one, which is an adaptation of an H.P. Lovecraft story,
is
six pages. Probably the Disraeli thing in here was my favorite.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, Disraeli.
It's really funny, too.
Yeah. If you guys don't know Disraeli.
He did Scarlet Traces. He did a lot of stuff with Ian Eddington.
Yeah, they're like the team from Britain.
Yeah, and they're like my favorite team.
Yeah, they did ever. Kingdom of the Wicked, which is this really great story about this kid who used to make wars with his teddy bears when he was younger, and then he kind of left them. And this fantasy world continues, and they're in like this terrible.
Yeah, they end up in like a war battle of the trenches, World War One style thing with all these toys, and it's awful.
And Scarlet Traces, which is like this really great Victorian murder mystery
set like after
War of the Worlds.
War of the Worlds.
Yeah, so they do a lot of really good stuff, and the Disraeli story in here is great. It's like this one page murder mystery with time travel in it.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of really cool stuff in here. It's definitely worth checking out. There's a new Wasteland story, which is
drawn by Charlie Adler in color.
Yeah,
first time
yeah.
I've ever seen his art in color. I think other than like maybe covers to Walking Dead.
Yeah. So no, this is definitely it's got a lot of really cool stuff in it. I mean, it's got Becky Cloonan in it. So what are you gonna do?
That's
yeah.
true. And they also had a couple other things in it. Two or three of them were from, they did a competition called the Northern Sequential Art Competition, which was to try and encourage new and rising talent from Britain or all of the UK. And so there are a couple of people like in the under 18 category and stuff, some very young talent who was actually pretty good in this.
And that's the stuff that's, oh, you said it was pretty good.
Some of it.
Yeah. Some of that stuff was pretty rough.
I said some of it.
It's an anthology, so it's hit or miss, but it's probably like 80% hit.
More than most anthologies, at least the less curated ones like this is. I would say it's definitely a lot more hit than miss.
Like 80%,
for sure.
80% hit.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely enough that it's not going to... The things that aren't good are like a page.
A page.
The Mike Carey Leonardo da Vinci story, that was hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. It's really like this really like weird, goofy alternate history
of what he was up to. And yeah.
Yeah, no, so that's a very cool book. I mean, if you're just looking for something different.
And it's in newspaper format, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, which is nice. Yeah, it opens up to be, I guess, about like 11 by 17.
Yeah, it's a double-sized comic for these pages, so you get some really nice art spreads.
So however big that is, who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know.
14 by 10.
Next.
So up next, we've got Voltron. This is written by Brandon Thomas, who's written every single Voltron comic I've ever read.
Voltron.
Which is just this one Voltron comic. And it's drawn by Ariel Padilla, who is either a boy or a girl.
Could be.
What have they done before?
Or a mermaid.
What has this person drawn before?
Voltron number one.
Yeah, that's probably it.
All right, who wants to talk about Voltron? This is definitely a Voltron comic.
Afraid so. I'll talk about the art a little bit. This Ariel kid did a good job of making it look like the toy, but that was it. Like, I felt like the art was, you know, and the rest of the comic was okay, but whenever Voltron was actually being drawn, it was like exactly like the toy without any like extra shading or, you know, depth to it. It just looked like the outline of a toy in a very clear style.
Action scenes were a little incomprehensible.
Yeah, exactly.
I couldn't tell what exactly was happening. There's a part where like Voltron splits this monster in half.
Really?
And then the monster like the monster turns into two other monsters, but I didn't know that because like I couldn't tell what was happening, and then somebody's like, oh, now there's two monsters, and I'm like, wait, what?
That's kind of the way the whole comic felt. We were talking earlier about how like there's like a lot of really weird stuff in this. Like, we don't all know a lot about Voltron.
Yeah.
But like none of the characters are like inside of the robot when it's moving around, and I always thought that was kind of one of the big things with Voltron, isn't
it? Yeah, so I couldn't tell like are there flashbacks.
Yeah,
or, I don't know.
There's like a bunch. It's very disjointed. It like jumps through time a little bit, but I couldn't tell what things were happening when and why or like I didn't know. I don't know who Zarkon is, but I guess he's like they're one of their villains or whatever because they're fighting him in the beginning. He's like, oh, we have to stop Zarkon from doing
right. But then there's a flashback to when he's building Voltron, or I don't know.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. There was no time to feel for any of the characters, and
they didn't use the characters much. It was a huge amount of just Voltron fight scenes without any characterization or ramifications or anything.
Yeah, it's like, this guy is the guy who has the red lion and he has a microphone or something. I don't know. This is...
But they're like not in it, so it's like really weird. I don't know. The best thing in this comic was the ad for the Voltron toy that was in the back. I was like, Voltron toys are still cool.
Yeah.
Even if Voltron comics aren't.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, so moving on to something that was actually really good. This is X Club number 1 of 5 by Simon Spurrier and Paul Davidson. The X Club have kind of showed up in X-Men recently as part of the whole Utopia team. And this comic was surprisingly funny.
It was really funny.
Yeah, they're bringing X-E back.
I mean, I don't know. It was like the uncanny X-Men side of the X-Men split.
So yeah,
it's Cyclops Utopia. And his team. It was interesting because it was like the X-Men doing like a lot of PR and stuff, but actually trying to change the world. So the opening thing is Danger. Is that the Danger Room robot?
Is that is Danger correct.
Using her, you know, nanotechnology or whatever to basically help build stuff while Magneto lifts a giant space platform into outer space as she builds a connected cable to it. So it's forming a space elevator. And I'm like, why don't you see more of that in these ridiculous superhero universes where people can do this stuff all the time?
Yeah.
You know, and it was pretty awesome. So that's the framework of the plot. And then, of course, funny stuff happens.
Yeah, most of the stuff that happens is definitely for comic effect. Like even Magneto lifting up this giant platform or whatever. It's like Dr. Nemesis, who's one of the members of X Club, is like,
he's my favorite.
He's like,
part.
Well, I was just going to figure out how to do that. This is like vaudevillian
crap.
Like, yeah. I don't know. And Danger's really funny in it.
And Cyclops.
Cyclops. I think that
was
so
it.
Funny.
It was like, for all this, and of course, there's fights in it at the end of the comic. It's just character interaction, and it's brilliantly written.
If you're one of those people that thinks that Cyclops is a douche, you'll definitely love him in this.
Yeah, it's really funny. Anytime something is attributed to the X-Men, they're like, oh, the X-Men are doing really good work here. And he's like, the X-Men of Utopia.
Yeah.
Because he hates Wolverine and his whole X-Men.
There's
team.
Even like a cutscene of Wolverine watching this on TV and being like, oh, Cyclops is such a jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, we're the real X-Men.
Yeah, and the main Dr. Nemesis, I guess he's kind of the main character, is really funny. And he just has disdain for everybody around him. And it's just like a fun book. And then there's kind of a little action twist thing at the end that's pretty cool that brings back an old villain. I thought it was really well done.
It was really fun. Yeah
I enjoyed the crap out of it.
The X-Men books are in good shape right
they're
now
doing
I feel
great.
Like
yeah
some of the side books, like the one just called X-Men Adjectiveless X-Men, right. And Astonishing X-Men aren't that great, but Uncanny X-Men, Wolverine and the X-Men, and now X-Club, and of course Uncanny X-Force, which is like a miracle.
Yeah.
Those are all really fantastic, so definitely worth checking out.
Yes, sir.
All right, so moving on to our last book of the week. This is the X-Statics Omnibus hardcover. This is by Peter Milligan and Mike Allred are the main team on this. And then it also has art by Darwin Cook, Paul Pope. I think there's some Sean Phillips in there. There are a bunch of people in this book, but this is amazing.
You just made a baby to my mind with your voice.
Yeah, basically, X-Statics was... I guess late 90s,
this
maybe early 2000s.
The same time they did the new X-Men under Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely. It was like the shakeup of the X-Men back then, which is weird that we're talking about.
I think this was
now.
Kind of the beginning of the revitalization of Marvel Comics.
Yep.
It started in X-Force, and they basically replaced the sort of aging team of Cable and Wolfsbane and all these people.
With completely new characters.
With completely new characters.
But still called the book and the team X-Force, which drove the old fans up the wall.
They were furious. The letters pages in those early issues are hilarious. Yeah. So just people that are so mad, they're like, where's Domino?
Where are all the pouches?
Where are all the pouches? But the basic idea of this book is that there's a team of mutants created. And more than wanting to save the world, they just want to be famous, and they're celebrities. Yep. And it was kind of the beginning of the culture of like reality television and stuff like that.
True.
And Milligan really tapped into that and made a book that is hilarious, but is also very dramatic and has a lot of sort of melodrama between the characters. The art's fantastic. Mike Allred, who of course drew Mad Men for a long time, still draws Mad Men.
And this brought us Dupe.
And it brought us Dupe, who's an amazing,
one of the greatest
really
X-Men characters ever.
Super powerful character that's kind of played for comic effect. So also, besides the X-Force issues and the 26 issues of the regular X-Statics series in this, it has the Wolverine Dupe miniseries by Darwin Cook.
Which is, geez.
Yeah, and it has kind of all their appearances in different various things, like even more recently, like in Nation X number 4. Mm-hmm. And It has the Dead Girl miniseries, which is also hilarious because it's Dead Girl with all these other dead superheroes.
Yeah.
There's a really racist superhero from the 40s in it. Yeah,
gosh.
Like Miss Liberty or something like that.
Yeah, it's really
funny. it's hilarious. This is a $125 book, I will say. Yeah. It's like something like 1,200 pages,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, it is one of those massive hardcovers that hurts your lap to read it.
It's and like it's 60 issues or something.
Yeah, it's like one big story, too.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. I feel like this was definitely one of the most overlooked books of all time.
The first issue of this was definitely still stands out in my mind as one of the best like first issues of any comic I've read. Like, it's so different, and then it twists everything around at the end. And I'm just like, it's incredible.
Yeah, the end is very shocking, but also definitely defines everything that you can kind of expect from the book in the future.
Yeah,
right.
It's great. It's definitely fantastic.
Yeah, this is maybe my favorite X-Men related comic of all time.
It's definitely mine.
Yeah.
Although I do love Uncanny X-Force right now.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so that's it for reviews this week. I think we're going to take a little music break like we do from time to time. And then we're going to come back with some viewer mail and then our picks of the week.
Yeah.
We'll see you guys in a couple minutes. So that was
that's Jared.
Jared needs to rock out. That was some music I made. It's all right.
I liked it.
Yeah, it's fun. This kind of sounds like a cross between Bruce Springsteen and Wolf Parade.
Both good bands or singers with bands.
All right, but we're back. You know what it's time for?
No.
Do you not?
Tell me.
Viewer mail. All right, so let's get into this. Our first question this week is from Christian.
Hey, Christian.
How's it going? I don't know if he's a Christian. Well,
he is a Christian.
I don't want to get into it. I will say Rick Perry's a jerk.
And not to most get political, but that's not political.
That's, yeah, it's a jerk. You guys know what I'm talking about. Anyway, Christian says, what's the secret origin story of Big Planet Comics? And add to that, how long have you guys at the Vienna shop known each other? Did you meet working at the shop, or did you know each other beforehand?
Well, it involves ooze. And a secret behind it.
It's too personal.
Yeah. So
no, Jared knows the secret origin of Big Planet Comics. Why don't you let people know?
I do. The original Big Planet Comics was started in Bethesda, Maryland, which is not far from where we're recording this right now, by Mr. Joel Pollack. And he got the name from a book by Jack Vance, who is a sci-fi / mystery / fantasy writer, who did a book called Big Planet.
That's a lot of slashes.
It is.
It's like Super Guns and Roses.
Yes. But yeah, Joel actually wrote to Jack Vance and said, you know, I loved your book. I'd like to use it for the name of my store. And Jack Vance wrote back and said, sure. So there is a letter up on the wall in Bethesda saying, you know, go ahead and use my name of my book for your store.
And that was 26 years ago?
25.
25. Right? About to be 26 pretty soon.
Yeah. Next year will be 20. So it's 25 and a half years.
So how did we all meet each other? I know a little bit of that.
I went on Craigslist and said, I need some cool people.
He said, I need some afternoon delight.
Yeah. Said, no rapists, please.
Oh, that's what I put.
But we showed up anyway.
I put that in the second ad after you guys had showed up.
So basically, I moved down to DC and I knew about Big Planet Comics already before I moved here because I used to order the SPX anthology every year. And there was an ad for Big Planet Comics in the back that was drawn by James Kolchaka.
Yep.
And I was like, this place seems cool. And so I went to the store in Georgetown and Jared was working there.
And you were like, nope, it's not cool.
I was like, nope, it's not cool. This guy listens to Felix the House Cat. I'm not into it.
I got complaints in Georgetown. Not to me, of course, but to other workers who are like, every time I go to Georgetown, it's like I'm in some like house transform.
So Jared has broadened his horizons. Now he listens to Downtempo
and
Laptronic.
Dubstep.
Electro.
He dropped the ecstasy.
And I was already really into like indie comics and stuff, and I was happy to find a store that was as well. And then I just shopped there long enough that I got a job.
Yep.
And then
I had just come back from an archaeological dig in Namibia. We were looking at the bones of elephants, but a different species of elephant. No, none of that's true.
God damn.
No, Nick worked at a video store.
Yep.
And it was closing down.
And I
what did you do to that?
I went to the to Big Planet Comics, and I was telling Kevin about the latest porn that we got, and he was like, "That's cool, man. Do you want to like work here?" And I was like, "All right."
And ever since, it's been tiptoeing through the tulips, doing podcasts, selling comics to people,
holding hands.
Wait. Actually, now that I think about it, I shopped at Big Planet Comics, and I got hired too.
That's the way we do it.
It's how we all.
We're not just going to hire some bozo off the street.
Yeah,
that's true.
We're going to hire a bozo off the street who stops at our store.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's that. Were those all the questions? Yeah. We didn't. None of us knew each other beforehand. We all knew each other through Big Planet Comics. So,
yeah.
And Christian has a second question as well. He says, "Out of you hosting today, because it's always a gamble. Who's going to be hosting this thing? Who knows? It could be Julian. It could be Eden. It could be somebody.
Peter."
It could be me with like an alias.
It could be you watching Alias.
Or reading Alias while watching Alias.
Nick watches the Alias Super Bowl special every year after the Super Bowl and pretends. He said, who would win in a Big Planet Comics arm wrestling tournament? Now, I have some insider information about this.
Oh?
It's that Nick's wrist hurts today.
Yeah.
And Jared said he threw out his back.
It's true.
So I'm saying it's me.
I'm saying that we have good excuses to let Kevin win.
I think this will be to be continued. I think once we're all healed up, we should have an arm wrestling competition.
If you guys would plug your ears for a second, I'm just going to say something, okay? Just don't listen to this.
All right.
Basically, I would go over the top, which is a maneuver not a lot of people know.
I'm listening.
Where you move your fingers over top of the other guy's thumb, and then you go over the top.
Yeah, but I'd use the eye of the tiger on your ass.
It's cool because you win the wrestling match, but the best thing that happens is you reconnect with your kid.
And Kevin really does need to reconnect with his kid.
I do. I'm like a cross between Dutch and Rocky.
Can I start listening again?
You can. Sorry.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Was that like secret strategy or something?
No, it was fine. Just know that I will break you.
Oh. Jared stopped listening like an hour ago.
Yeah. Jared is not listening.
It's the only way I get through these
podcasts. Point at Jared and then he starts talking. So thank you for the questions, Christian.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We've got another question here from Matthew McCary, who sent us some questions before.
Okay.
I probably should have told you guys this question beforehand so you could have formulated an answer.
Like a complicated one.
But it says, when I was in college back in the day before digital and the infancy of the age where everything got put in a trade, I lived in the middle of nowhere town, appropriately called Farmville.
Wow.
I hear you have to buy Zynga points to live there.
No, I like that there is a Farmville, Virginia, and there's also a Lynchburg, Virginia. And I'm like, come on, Virginia.
The closest shop was an hour away in Lynchburg.
Yep.
There you go.
What?
Right across the street from Scary Liberty University. I don't know what that is, but.
Is it called Scary Liberty University or is it called Larry Liberty University?
Scary is not capitalized, so I don't think it's part of the name. Okay.
Well, I think there's Lynchburg College in Lynchburg, but isn't like JMU down there?
No, I think G. Gordon Liddy teaches at Liberty University.
Wow.
I made that trek for 2 years every week before transferring. Wow. And then he says, what's the most ridiculous in hindsight thing you guys have ever done related to comics? Opening a comic shop and or working at one does not count.
That's not ridiculous. That's a highly profitable business.
It's ridiculous.
No, it's ridiculous.
So do any of you guys have crazy comic book stories? That's what I said. I should have let you guys know about this question beforehand.
I gathered my brother up, who is fluent in Spanish, and we flew to Switzerland, and then from Switzerland we flew to Barcelona to go to a comics convention.
I think that seems like a pretty good one.
It's pretty crazy.
Which was awesome because he was translating for me the whole time. And then I realized that a lot of Spanish comics creators speak very good English when they would kind of look at me in disgust. So I'm like, ooh, ask him this. He's like, in English, he's like, what do you want to ask me? So,
when I was 12 or 13, I stole a bunch of comics from some dude.
Was it from Big Planet Comics?
At gunpoint. No, not at gunpoint.
I have a story similar to that. Did you really steal comics from somebody?
Yeah.
Oh, you rapscallion.
Wait, what comics?
I'm pretty sure there were Spider-Man comics. Possibly Eric Larson's Spider-Man comics.
Oh,
with great power comes the ability to steal.
Yep.
When I was younger, I don't know, this is like, it's pretty ridiculous. I used to sell things at school. Like I would sell candy. Marvel trading cards. And there was this kid that I went to school with named Matthew Dolan. What's up, Matt Dolan? And I sold him a copy of X-Men 13. It was in really good shape. And I sold it to him for $200, which was like not a ripoff.
The Kirby X-Men 13?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were like the Jim
I had
Lee.
Stolen it from Nick's friend. But so I sold it to him. And then his dad called my mom and was like, you ripped off my kid. That was his money for wrestling camp. And blah, blah, blah. We were like 11 years old. And my mom was like, whatever, dude. Like, he paid for it. You know, transaction
awesome.
Finished. Yeah, my mom's pretty awesome.
They shook on it. Your mom is
pretty
awesome.
So, I mean, that's pretty much the end of that story. But my mom was like, why are you giving your 11-year-old kid like $200 to carry around? Like, what is wrong with you? What do you think's gonna happen? You're lucky you didn't come home with 400 crybabies and a copy of the Namor card from the Marvel trading set. Yeah, so
you just threw that one in for free.
Yeah, I threw that. That was a bonus.
You're a nice guy.
Yeah.
Bonus.
Also, after he bought it, he he pulled it out of the thing, the bag and board. The tape caught on the cover and ripped in half.
Oh.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Rookie mistake.
His family was rich, though, and I was poor, so whatever. I'm like Robin Hood.
No refund.
Steal from the rich, give to yourself.
Yeah, steal from the rich and give to myself. Poor. I think that's also just like being a thief.
Yeah.
I didn't steal from anybody.
But you were poor, so it was okay.
Business transactions.
So I don't know if that was like a crazy thing, but it's an interesting story. Comic story, right?
Yeah.
So thank you, Matthew, for the question. I'm glad that you switched and started coming out to Big Planet Comics.
Me too. It's a much shorter drive from Farmville.
All right, so now we've got six questions from Jessica.
Oh,
hey, Jesus. Jessica.
Hey, Jessica. It's been a long time. I sent Jessica an email. I was like, you don't email us anymore.
I would just like to say that we appreciate and would like you to send questions every week.
Yeah,
and
the restraining order has lapsed.
Yeah, so everything's fine now.
Wait, it did?
It did.
Oh, because we're in a different jurisdiction, right? So we have to get a new... Oh, what? Sorry.
Why do you think my wrist hurts?
That doesn't even make any sense.
All
right, so the first question from Jessica is pretty straightforward. It says, when are you doing the quiz again? I miss it.
Oh, God.
BFF, Jessica.
Aw.
She always, at the end, she takes it to the next level, and it's just terrible. We'll do it next week.
Yeah, I was supposed to have one this week, and I was too lazy.
Jared's too lazy. I'll put together a quiz for you guys next week.
Oh.
All right, so moving on to the next question. I hope that answered your question. Mm-hmm. I think it must have.
Yeah.
It says, in all of comics, who has the best hair? See, this is why Jessica should always send in questions.
These are good ones.
And then there are
seven
exclamation points after the question mark.
Oh, so it's like a question mark, but then showing she's super excited to question us.
Right, like her signature was just exclamation points.
Oh.
She really wants to know.
That's how she spells her name now.
Nice.
She's really excited. So who has the best hair in all the comics?
Ooh, wow.
Cerebus.
It's almost certainly a Marvel character.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Longshot. Longshot has like this kind of like he has like a mop top, kind of like the Beatles, and then like a mullet that seems like it's a completely separate hairdo that comes out of the back out of it.
That's pretty good. I might say Omak. He was pushing the mohawk in a good way.
Omak does have a giant thick mohawk.
Yeah, he does have a pretty sweet mohawk.
He's like if Mr. T let himself go.
I'm gonna go with Luke Cage, but early Luke Cage.
Oh, when he had the fro, I was like, Luke Cage is bald.
Yeah, he had the sweet.
I think
afro.
He shaves.
He had. I don't think it was quite an afro. I think that's called a low fro.
Yeah, but it had the combination of like it wasn't just that, but he had a tiara too. So
he did have a tiara of power.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think those are pretty good ones. I mean, there are definitely a lot of like Wolverine type hairdos as well.
Yeah, Wolverine's the one where I'm like,
Wolverine's
how does he do that?
It's amazing. Yeah, anytime I see someone at a convention who pulls it off, it's pretty impressive because it fits his helmet or his face mask or whatever.
It's true. It like goes up
inside of it.
But then there's Wolfsbane and like Feral and all those people have the same haircut as Wolverine as well.
I also Superman's haircut from the 90s.
The curl.
Oh, the mullet?
The mullet of power.
That's a good one.
No, it's not.
It's good. Well, and he has the curly Q. It's a very iconic.
Yeah, people are talking about that Superman is like one of the few people that you can recognize his haircut or just him by his haircut. That's like he's not wearing a costume or he's not wearing a face mask or anything. It's just
I think you can recognize Wolverine by his haircut.
I know, but
he's
one of the few.
He's one of the few. Him and Wolverine.
Yeah.
And Rogue.
And David Bowie from Ziggy Stardust. Period. All right, so moving on. She says, sorry, Jessica. In all comics, who has the best accessory?
Cable pouches.
Nope.
Cable's pouches are
Kitty Pryde, Lockheed.
Oh, wait, you're jumping ahead.
Oh, sorry.
You're jumping ahead because that might be an answer to another question here.
I withdraw the answer. Accessories. The pouches are good.
Batman's pouches.
All of Nick's answers are pouches.
Cerebus's pouch.
Does anybody have an answer that's not a pouch?
Accessories.
There's Doctor Strange's Eye of Agamotto.
That's a good one. That's actually what I was going to say.
Oh, really?
You shouldn't ask me.
What's his cape of levitation? He's got all kinds of cool gear.
I'm going to say Ghost Rider's motorcycle. It's got flaming wheels.
It's pretty sweet.
It's a sweet accessory.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking things that would come in a toy of a character.
Wonder Woman's invisible jet's pretty good.
Nice. Luke Cage's tiara.
Luke Cage's tiara is definitely a good accessory.
What about his chain belt?
Yep. That's pretty good too. Made out of actual chain.
I'm going out on a limb on this one. Flaming Carrots Plunger.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. What about Herbie's Lollipop? So
that's true. Herbie does
what
have
about what's the leader of the Wrecking Crew? He has a giant crowbar.
Okay, yeah.
That's true.
An Asgardian crowbar.
Similar to a leader of a regular Wrecking Crew.
Yeah.
All right, so that's some good accessories, right?
Mm-hmm. There are a lot more. We're getting more started.
All right, let's
Spider-Woman's earrings? I don't know.
Let's keep moving on. Here's another one. In all comics... Oh, wait, she said after that one, love you guys and gals, if that's happening for a second time.
we'll see if we can make that happen.
In all comics, who has the best pet? Very nice. Truly yours, Jessica.
Nice. Jared, you got an answer for this?
You already answered
this. That's a tough one. I don't know. I think that's a bit... Yeah, all right, Lockheed's awesome. Yeah, Kitty Pryde has Lockheed.
That's definitely a very good one.
He's a freaking dragon. He's amazing.
He's a freaking dragon.
Space Although,
dragon.
Also, your favorite Usagi Yojimbo, he has that dinosaur.
Tokkaji.
Tokkaji!
Thanks, Spot. No,
just, yeah, Spot. There you go. That's what I'm talking about.
Read all the Spot storylines?
No, I haven't read. I don't know what that is.
Oh.
I'm going to go with...
Sad things happen.
Sparky.
Sparky?
The super horse? Isn't that his name?
Whoa.
No, Comet's the super horse.
What's Sparky then? Is he this?
Sparky's a...
Comet's the horse, yes.
Sparky's a dog for not. Somebody else?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You mean Beppo, the super monkey?
That's the one.
Yeah.
No.
It's Beppo.
Oh, no, Comet is the super horse, right?
I'm going to go with Lockheed. No, not Lockheed. Lockjaw.
That's what I was going to say.
Damn it.
I got one. Snowy for Tintin.
Snowy for
that
Tintin
dog saves his life all the time.
That is definitely true.
Yeah, but Lockjaw's a giant dog and can teleport.
That's definitely true as well. And he's got a tuning fork on his head. I'm going to go with Ace the Bat Hound.
Nice.
Really?
Especially in the Batman Beyond cartoon. He's amazing.
There's also Zabu. Isn't that Kazar's saber-tooth tiger?
Yeah, the tiger.
Oh, saber-tooth. Man, I wish I had a saber-tooth tiger.
Me too.
That would be rad.
Whoa, what about, is it Devil Dinosaur? With the kid and the dinosaur?
Yeah, which one's the pet, though? They're kind of...
The dinosaur is the pet.
They're kind of a duo.
Oh, I can't remember the kid's name. Yeah, he's like
Moonboy.
Moonboy. Yeah. There you go.
Moonboy's Devil Dinosaur.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Speaking of animals, Nick said that they're trying to...
live action?
Make, like recreate a woolly mammoth.
Oh, yeah, that was in the news recently.
Oh, yeah, they've been working on it for years because they've had them frozen in...
Jared knows a lot about this, apparently.
It's like the most exciting... It's basically the only thing that might work for Jurassic Park is they actually have the physical body of a woolly mammoth
DNA
frozen in a, you know, a giant glacier or something, unlike dinosaurs, which is just like bits and pieces of it.
And they can actually impregnate a regular elephant.
That would be amazing.
I saw a documentary about that. It was called Ice Age. I think it had Tim Allen in it or Ray Romano or something.
One of those terrible guys.
Those guys are great.
Oh, yeah.
They were both on TV shows. That
everybody loves Raymond.
Everybody loves Tim Allen.
Everybody loves Romano.
I think is the name of that show.
Cheese.
All right. And then she also says, if you could be best friends with any character, who would it be and why? Also, is this person different than the character you think you are most likely to be friends with?
Yes.
Just wondering. Happy Wednesday.
Oh,
I'm most likely to be friends with D-Man because he's like a... homeless crazy man.
But who would you most like
the
to
most
be
like to be friends
actually,
with
I would, think you're most likely to be friends with Drunken Times Tony Stark.
Drunken Times
Tony Stark in a bar and he would buy you a drink.
That's my favorite storyline. It's classic Drunken Times with Tony Stark.
Nah, Iron Fist.
Yeah, because he likes comics
and he knows kung fu and he's rich.
He is rich.
He's got jets and stuff. He'd be awesome.
Jared, who would you like to be best friends with?
I don't know, that's a good question. I'm thinking got no idea.
Luke Cage?
No, he would not put up with me. He'd think I'm lame.
Sweet Christmas. That would have been a good answer.
Sweet Christmas.
Tintin. You'd probably like to be friends with
I
Tintin.
Would like to be friends with Tintin. We would go on some crazy adventures.
You'd break up heroin rings and stuff.
But who would Jared be most likely to be friends with?
Captain Haddock.
Sandman.
Wait, which one?
You know, Orpheus or whatever. Or whatever.
I'm talking the cool
or
one.
Death.
That'd be awesome.
All your characters are like super depressing, like goth characters.
The crow.
I don't know who I'd most like to be friends with.
It's a hard question.
I think I really like Quentin Quire.
Oh my god,
from X, he's amazing.
You guys would be terrible together.
We would be awful. We would be the biggest jerks in the entire world.
I also like to be friends with Conan,
because then you would live in Hyboria.
Hell yeah.
I don't think we'd survive.
But who would I be most likely to be friends with? Probably Quentin Quire.
But if I was friends with Conan, I would survive because I'd be friends with Conan.
That's right.
That's true.
I mean,
a lot of Conan's friends get killed to propel a plot. So you'd be like, oh, Nick, I will avenge your death.
He's like, here's a million naked women. I'm like, thanks, Conan.
Thanks, Conan.
I'm going to go rob something.
So that leads right into our next question, which is, if you could marry one character, who would it be? Unless you are already married, in which case you should not be thinking about marrying anyone else, obviously. I don't know who that's aimed at. Also, what character should I marry since I suddenly begin seeking an illustrated life partner?
So, Nick, are you calling dibs on Conan?
No, you can marry Conan.
All right.
Who do you guys want to marry?
It's either Conan or Cole. I'm not sure.
You're not going to marry a lady?
Oh, I can marry a lady. That's true.
you can marry Lockjaw if you want.
Jared just figured out that he can marry a lady.
That's pretty amazing.
Nobody ever told him these things.
That's a good question.
Pick one.
It is a good question. You should answer it.
Gwen Stacy before she died might be good.
Yeah, before she died is definitely the important part there.
I'm He's like, girl genius.
He's like Gwen Stacy after she died.
girl genius.
What about you, Nick? Who would you marry?
God, I have no idea. Let me think about this. You go first.
I'm already married to a lovely lady.
He's
but
he's,
Jessica told me not to answer this question.
But if you weren't married and you could marry a comic book character. say you're like 15 and you're like, I want to marry this comic book character. Who would it be?
Dazzler.
Dazzler.
Yeah, she's a disco queen.
And she's a rock star.
And she's a rock star.
It's true. You would marry Dazzler.
No, maybe.
And like, Dazzler number one sold 400,000 copies in 1981.
Oh, God, we just looked that up.
So there's totally that.
I'll tell you who I would not marry.
Who?
Jean Grey. She could read my mind. I mean, it's awful.
But you can marry her over and over again every time she comes back to life.
Well, she wouldn't marry me, I guess, if she could read my mind.
That's probably true.
No, definitely not.
I don't know. Hopi from Love and Rockets. I don't know if I could keep up with her, but she'd be pretty cool.
Isn't she a lesbian? Well, Michelle Bachmann says that gay people should be allowed to marry people of the opposite sex.
That's true.
They should be allowed.
Yeah, they should.
I would marry Shauna the She-Devil.
Wow, that's a good choice.
That leaves nothing to the imagination.
Literally.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she lives on an island full of dinosaurs.
That's true, and you know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dinosaurs.
She's the only person on the island. It'd be romantic. We'd be alone on an island, tropical
gives you
island.
Some good chances of hooking up with her.
So who's
got no choice?
So who should Jessica marry?
I know, this is
who
hard.
Should Jessica marry?
Who would you
that's
set
what she
up
says.
With Jessica?
Yeah.
Gambit.
Ooh.
Well, actually.
Uh-oh.
What's that actor's name? Taylor Kitsch?
Yeah.
I know that Jessica is in love with Taylor Kitsch.
There you go.
And so she should marry Gambit.
From Wolverine Origins.
From Wolverine Origins, who's also John
Carter. Or X-Men Origins Wolverine.
She likes him from the Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, so you should marry him. You were probably already planning on it. Yeah. Or Ryan Gosling,
just make
if
him,
was ever in a comic book.
Just make him pretend he's Gambit.
Didn't she ask us? She asked us a question about Ryan Gosling at some point, didn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
whatever we said that Ryan Gosling comic would be, you should marry him from that comic.
Yeah. Also, there's a Doctor Who comic. You can marry Doctor Who.
You could marry Doctor Who. He's in a comic as well.
It's true.
Yeah, yeah. And then she says LYLAS. For sure. Do you guys know what that means?
No.
It means love you like a sister.
Nice.
I had to look that up.
Okay. I was like, how do you know that?
Yeah. And then at the end, she says, hope to see you all soon since you're my most best friends, Jessica.
It's really sad.
It is really sad. So if you guys have questions, like Jessica, like Christian, like Matthew, you should send them to us at podcast@bigplanetcomics.com. So we were talking about this a little earlier. We mostly get questions from customers at our Vienna store.
Not only, we get a few others. But
we do get a few others.
The majority.
But yeah, so if you guys are at any of the other stores and you want to send us a question, feel free. Or even if you don't shop at any of the Big Planet Comics stores and somehow are listening to this podcast.
Don't be shy. Don't be afraid to get nerdy.
Don't be afraid. Yeah, get nerdy with it. I mean, we will answer questions about Roman Polanski or whether The Thing or Hulk would win in a fight.
We will answer all three of those at once.
You can ask us what's our favorite Mike Grell comic. I don't know if I got an answer.
Shaman.
That. Shaman's Tears.
That's all I got. I didn't even know the full title.
Is that one? Shaman's Tears?
Warlord?
Yeah. Longbow Hunters. Green Arrow Longbow Hunters.
Nice. Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
All right. So moving on to, we're going to finish this up, wrap it up with our picks of the week.
Yep.
We talked a lot about what to do with this little section of the show.
I'm still not sure what we're doing.
Yeah, we're still not really sure what we're doing.
But this we try to review all the new stuff that comes out, but there's also things that are not new that we're continually reading that are still awesome.
But my pick of the week is something that we already reviewed.
What you got?
It's the Ecstatics Omnibus.
Oh, you like it?
I love it.
That's definitely my favorite thing that came out this week.
I love it so much. I will say also Animal Man number 4 is amazing. I just want to let people know that series is consistently incredible. And as is The Strange Talent of Luther Strode, which I think we've talked about on the show here.
That's on my list.
It stays very, very good. And those are my picks of the week.
I got a few things.
What do you got, Nick?
I got Planet of the Apes, Betrayal of the Planet of the Apes number 2. We talked about the first one, and it was incredible. The second issue is even better.
Some books remain good, yeah, even when they're not new.
Builds on the mystery and adds new layers, and there's an amazing plot twist near the end. And another one is Superboy Smallville Attacks trade, which is collects all the Jeff Lemire Superboy issues. I think it's all of it.
It's all of it.
All 11
are. Yeah. It's all one story. And it's an amazing story, and it's very fun and interesting, and it's cool. Yeah, if you like Superboy, it's awesome. Yeah,
yeah. And Lemire, of course, is running Animal Man now, and yeah, he's doing great stuff.
He's an up and comer, that kid.
What do you got, Jared?
So yeah, I also will vote Strange Talent of Luther Strode, which is amazing still. But also the last issue of the Rent series came out, which is a San Francisco crime thriller about
we talked about the first issue.
Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting though because I still like this series, but it's definitely one that you have to sit down and reread the whole thing, at least for me. There's so many double crossings and, like, you know, multiple people all trying. It's, you know, a typical twisted noir thriller. But this came out in book form this week was The Criminal Trade, Last of the Innocent, which is Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, I think, at their best. And
cream of the crop of crime comics.
Yeah, but this was also a 4-issue miniseries that got put into the book. And it's
some good alliteration over there.
It just reading them together, like, and comparing the two of them was astounding because this one has flashbacks to, like, him growing up in, like, a more innocent time, and it's all done in the style of Archie comics.
Yeah.
And, like, it's just something that you can't really do except in comics. And, like, but it's also the 4 chapters. Each chapter ends on a cliffhanger, and it, like, really sets up every issue. And it's, like, written very well as issues and also as amazing as a single story in a trade. And I feel like Rents is a single great story but not good single issues because it's so complicated.
Yeah, and that's Criminal seems to go back and forth between doing that and doing longer form stories that are like 5 issues long.
No, but this was 4 issues. And, but he had perfect breaks on each one where it ends on a cliffhanger or a twist or some crazy last line, and it's amazing.
We should say there's a new series coming out from Sean Phillips and Ed Brubaker called Fatale.
It's gonna be amazing,
and it looks absolutely incredible.
It's got the typical beautiful Phillips woman on it, but there's also some dude who looks like a monster's head or something, so I don't know if it's gonna be a fantasy crime series or what.
Yeah, I say we should mention we don't really know that much about it except that they're doing it, so it's gonna be really good.
Astounding.
Yeah. So yeah, those were our picks. I think we need to figure out a new way to do that, but something that's a little more exciting.
There's more stuff.
We should do more of a countdown.
We should do a countdown. Maybe I should make some theme music.
Drum roll.
There should be drum rolls. I think I have a drum roll. That is definitely not a drum roll.
Maybe more reggae beats or something.
More reggae beats, more dancing.
Yeah, more dancehall.
Yeah, yeah. People like to listen to dancing on podcasts.
Yeah.
They'll be like, oh, wow, Kevin's busting some moves right now.
So, yeah, if you guys want to hear that, come back next week. We're just going to be dancing for an hour. We're going to dance. You're not going to be able to hear the music we're listening to because it's all copyrighted.
I'm so down.
But we are going to dance up a storm.
You can hear us dance.
You guys ready for that?
I'm ready.
We're going to be sweating to the oldies.
Oh, yeah.
Next week on the Big Planet Comics podcast.
Yep.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.
Goodbye.